we have two more marvelous Easter readings. Aren't these readings of the Easter octave beautiful and stirring? And also challenging. The octave of Easter, as we have been recognizing all week, is on the one hand an invitation for us to accept the truth of the resurrection, but then it's also a challenge for us to make the adjustment, to make the change to living by faith in the risen life. It's one thing to say Jesus rose from the dead, if we can even get that. But once we say that that's true, it has implications for how we're going to live now. And that big adjustment is part of the challenge of Easter. So in Lent and in Holy Week, we face the challenge of dying. In the octave of Easter and in the Easter season, we face the challenge of rising. And it's not easy either. It's not easy to die, but it's not easy to rise either. We don't change that easily. We were reflecting yesterday on Saint Joseph, and he comes back to mind in reflecting on this challenge of Easter faith. That Saint Joseph was amazing in how quickly he could adjust to the new situation, the new light that he was given, or the new realization of what was God's will. So, and he was expecting to live with Mary. Then he finds out she's pregnant. He says, "Oh, I guess I can't live with her." Then he gets the dream, and he says, "I guess I can live with her." But he's just so ready to change. He seems to have no attachment to himself, to his own will, to his own preferences. He just does what God says. He was expecting to stay in Bethlehem with the newborn Jesus. Another dream in the night. He said, "Well, I guess I'm not staying in Bethlehem. I'm going to Egypt." But he does it. Those are not Easter events, but they do give us an insight into what Easter faith is like. It's this readiness to accept the newness that God reveals. Now that takes mature faith, and we have seen this week that even the apostles are not that mature yet. They're not that quick to jump on the Easter faith. They're still used to their own way of seeing, their own expectations. In today's gospel, we reflect on the seven apostles who decide to go fishing. I always find this a very easy gospel to reflect on, because it reveals the human tendency to go back to the way things were, to go back to our normal way of life, or our familiar way of life. And I think that's very common. It's hard to change. We're used to doing things a certain way. Now, these are fishermen. So once Jesus is no longer around, I mean, they know he rose because they saw him already. But when he's not around, what do they do now? Well, if we're hungry or we want to get that sense that we're actually doing something or accomplishing something, well, let's go fishing. That's the one thing we know how to do. So they go fishing. They expect to catch fish. They don't catch any fish. And one of the things about this newness is to let go of our expectations, or to let go of our control of how things will be. Fishermen know that if you go out at night and fish, and by morning you have fish. Well, it doesn't work that way once you're following the risen Lord. He has a much bigger, a much greater catch. So we have to let go of those old expectations. Well, we know what happens. At the official night, they get nothing. Jesus shows up on the shore, says, we'll try the right side of the boat. They do it, and they get a huge catch of fish, 153. The contrast between doing things our way and doing things God's way couldn't be clearer. The fruit of doing things our way is nothing, no fruit. The fruit of doing things God's way is abundance, 153. I've been reflecting a little bit about expectations and about control, about abandonment. And one of the very practical circumstances that's leading me to reflect on this is our water problem. This is the fourth day we don't have any water. So Tuesday there was no water. I said, oh, that's really, unpleasant. I had all my complaints. But then at night the water came back on. So I had a little bit of water. Wednesday, again, there's no water. I said, what's going on here? He said, oh, this is an emergency, so there's no water. So, but at night it came back on. So I'm getting the pattern. Sure, yesterday there was no water. So I said, well, okay, that's the way they're doing it now. We have no water. We'll just wait till tonight. Last night, the water never came back on. This morning, there's no water. I said, oh my goodness. That broke the pattern. It broke the expectation. It's not what I thought was going to happen. So how can I ponder on the gospel? We don't have any water. Well, that is the gospel. I mean, that's the circumstance that God placed in our laps. I think, were you in the same circumstance? At least here, there's no water. So I say, well, my goodness, it's not what I thought it was going to be. I'm going to be the one who has to make an adjustment. The Filipino way of dealing with things like this is find the humor in it. Did you see that joke that's being passed around that the government is so concerned about COVID and saying that the reason why there's a surge of cases is people are not practicing social distancing. So they said, well, what we'll do, we'll turn off the water so that no one will take a bath. And then no one will want to be anywhere near anybody else. Social distancing. Okay. But that's just the humorous side. But the spiritual lesson here is we have expectations about how things should be. Even the expectation of how our sufferings will come to an end and bear fruit. It's not like that. God has a different thing in mind. Bigger, better, invisible to us, but certainly greater. So we have to be able to transcend our natural expectations and embrace quickly what God has in mind, whatever it might be. That's why I brought up Joseph. Joseph just dropped what he thought he was going to be doing, and he did what God wanted him to do. Here, the apostles in the boat, they go backward instead of forward. When they get to the shore, they discover Jesus already had fish and it was already cooked. He had bread too. They didn't need to go fishing at all. Here he is providing a breakfast for them. What are they going to do with all those fish now? But it's the sign that God has something more in mind. Well, the beautiful first reading tells us that Peter and John learned their lesson. This is the passage after the healing of the crippled man, and they're dragged into the Sanhedrin, or the court of the high priests. This is the first time. This is not the last, but the first time they get dragged in front of these big deal authorities, the top men of the Jewish religion, Annas and Caiaphas. Their names are familiar to us because we just heard about them last week as key figures in the trial of Jesus. So these are powerful men and not good men. Very intimidating figures. But Peter and John are filled with the Holy Spirit. They're living on a higher level. They're not simply living on the level of human expectation, human intimidation, human power. they're so free of all of that, that when the high priests say, well, what right do you have to be doing this? They stand up and give a very straightforward and challenging proclamation of the gospel. It's really beautiful. I love it. Peter is the one who speaks out, of course. Leaders, elders, if you're going to ask us about this, if you're going to give us an opportunity to give an explanation for this good deed and how it happened that he was saved, well, then all of you and all the people of Israel should know. This is a proclamation. The whole Jewish world should know that it was in the name of Jesus Christ the Nazarene, whom you crucified, whom God raised from the dead. In his name, this man stands before you healed. Can't be more straightforward than that. Is Peter intimidated by Caiaphas and Annas? Well, maybe on some natural level he is, but he seems to have abandoned himself so thoroughly that intimidation doesn't have any effect on him. I'm not saying he didn't have any fear, because fear is not that easy to overcome, but he doesn't let fear determine how he acts. And then he goes on. This is even bolder. I mean, he quotes from the Psalm. He quotes the scriptures to the experts in the scriptures. Here's this fisherman from Galilee saying this Psalm about the stone rejected by the builders is about Jesus. He is the stone rejected by you, the builders, which has become the cornerstone. This is amazing and beautiful. It's a fisherman who is no longer fishing for fish. He's fishing for men. He's fishing for the very men who are threatening him. Here he is. He's the cornerstone. You missed him before. Now is your chance to accept the cornerstone. You rejected him. Now accept him. There's no salvation through anyone else, nor is there any other name under heaven given to the human race by which we are to be saved. That's the gospel. And Peter is proclaiming it with faith, with joy, with courage. Well, what we're being presented with here is that the Peter of the gospel and the Peter of the first reading. The Peter who went backward, went back to fishing because that's what he figured he could do. And the Peter who's going forward into the unknown. Talk about going out into the deep. He's proclaiming to the men who put Jesus to death the very thing that he was afraid to even think of just last week. That was several months earlier in his experience. But for us, it was just last week. In fact, exactly 1 week ago was Good Friday, and Peter denied that he even knew Jesus 3 times. This is Easter faith. This is not simply saying, I know Jesus rose from the dead. This is saying, the way that I live now is based on that truth. The way that we live now is based on this truth, that Jesus is the name and there's no other name by which we can be saved. Jesus is our hope. Jesus is our life. Jesus is our way. And so we don't have to go back to our old ways. In fact, if we do, it will be fruitless anyway. Let's go forward. Go forward in faith. Build on this cornerstone, rejected by the world. It was seemingly worthless in the eyes of the world, but this is the one solid stone on which our whole life is built, Jesus Christ.